program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
That socket joint. Queen of pain, ooh, you look sweet in that garter belt. Queen of pain, give me one even harder belt. Queen of pain, I think that's gonna leave a welt. Clean that stain. Queen of pain, ooh, this is a strain up on this crane. Queen of pain, I'm spinning like a weather vane. Queen of pain, what you gonna do with that cane?
Queen of pain, yeah. Lux and Ivy of the Cramps know what it's all about, don't they? Oh, welcome, seekers, to part two of our Betty Page extravaganza. I'm your blistered sister of the airwaves, Reverend Susie the Floozy. And ooh, I can't wait to unleash the last installment of this remarkable audio document on you. Oh, here's a much shorter rundown of the facts before we begin. In 1996, I was working for Greg Theakston of the Betty Pages, and I was given a two-hour audio cassette to transcribe, one which stunned me with its sheer, overwhelming importance. Betty Page had been rediscovered and was pouring out her story over the phone to Theakston, and I got to be a fly on the wall. Ooh, the temptation to play this over the radio was fierce, but seekers, I felt a strange sort of professional courtesy to Betty, especially after I spoke with her myself on the phone. She was old now and quite gun-shy about her fame, and I had no desire to cause her further pain because she was so overwhelmed by the attention. So, seekers, I've sat on this precious cassette for 12 years.
16.
Never playing any of it on the air. Until now. Oh, poor Betty is dead now. Poor sweet Betty. And her fame can't hurt her anymore. And I want to take this time to breathe life into somebody who may exist only as an image in your mind. This was a real, feeling, wonderful woman. And once you hear the story from her very own lips, she is going to be so real to you that you are going to feel the loss, damn it. But, enveloped in a fog of myth and rumor, these are the facts as we found them out about Betty. She was a good-hearted Tennessee girl who went to New York City. One day on the beach in 1950, she was discovered by Jerry Tibbs, a black pinup photographer who taught her the ways of posing. Soon, she was a darling of camera clubs, groups of amateur and semi-professional photographers who'd pool their money, hire some models, and make a fun junket out of it. She did work for goofy girly magazines, and then she fell in with Paula and her brother Irving Claw, who created some of the most dynamic images of Betty ever committed to film. The incredible bondage sessions that she did with the Claws made her an icon, but it also made her a target. And when the Senate cracked down on juvenile delinquency and pornography in the late 1950s, Betty got caught in the crossfire. She went to Florida and did more famous work with Bunny Yeager. But then she dropped off the radar, leaving behind nothing but an enduring mystery and thousands upon thousands of photographs. Nothing much was known about her until she resurfaced in the mid-1990s. While Betty was very forthcoming about parts of her life, keep in mind that this poor lady was cloaked in personal darkness. This interview was done from a payphone in the hallway of a halfway house in Orange County, California, on the grounds of a psychiatric institute, because poor Betty turned schizophrenic in the later years. Oh, for obvious reasons, she didn't want to talk about that part of her life, but the window that she throws open to us seekers is precious. And I defy the most hard-ass among you not to be moved by the story of Betty and the Lobsters. So here we go with side two of the Betty Page interview. Enjoy, seekers.
Hello? Hello, I'm trying to reach Betty Page.
Betty Page?
Yes, ma'am. Sir?
One moment, please.
Hello?
Hello, Betty Page?
Yes?
Betty, this is Greg Theakston calling you from New York City.
Oh, hi.
Hello, I got your letter today. I was delighted to hear you're not mad at me.
No, why should I be mad at you?
Well, I don't know. I was doing a magazine about you, and I had no way to know whether you liked it or you didn't.
Well, I sent you a Christmas card and wrote you a little note today.
Oh, you're a sweetie.
You'll probably get it in a few days.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm sorry to hear you don't have your post office box anymore.
No, Jack, my brother, told me to discontinue it because he said people could find out where I was through the post office box.
Yeah, maybe. Now, did he ever send you a copy of the book that I sent to him? I sent two copies of the Betty Page's annual to...
Yeah, he sent me a copy of that and one of the poster calendars.
Right, by Olivia.
Yes, that's what I was mentioning to you in the card that I was thanking you for.
Well, I hope I didn't get too much wrong on your life story here.
No, I thought it was very interesting. A lot of it, I don't remember. If it was true, I don't remember it.
Uh-huh. Well, certainly...
Some of the fellas I was supposed to have dated.
Uh-huh.
But I just don't remember a lot of it myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Albert brought you back some good memories. Did you like the pictures from your yearbook?
Yes, I did. I don't know where you got all of that.
I went down to Nashville. I went down to your school. And they had no idea you were so popular there either. You're a big star back at Hume Fog now.
Oh, my.
The whole place knows about you. And,
I was telling you that I liked everything in the book except one picture.
Oh, yeah.
The one in the front of the book where I'm holding that...
In the hula skirt?
Hula skirt.
Oh, I think that's adorable.
I think it's too much.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep that in mind. If we ever run it again, I'll cut it out. Did you like the picture of you in the marching outfit, the ROTC picture? The drawing?
Oh, no, I didn't see any drawing.
Yeah, there's a drawing in here of it by Glenn Barr, of you in your ROTC uniform saluting. Because we didn't have a picture of you in uniform.
Oh.
So I had this guy draw it up.
I don't remember that.
I had a picture of you teaching at the chalkboard.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Well,
it's not in there.
Yeah, very early, like page 15 and 16.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'll take a look when you get back to it.
All right,
I'm glad to hear that you could use the money, and I have a lot more for you.
Yes, I can certainly use it.
Well,
I'm just living on Social Security now.
Mm-hmm. Does this surprise you that this is all happening?
Yes, it does. It's a big surprise. I don't know where it got started again after all those years.
Well, I guess the fans who saw you back in the 50s and 60s never forgot you. And as soon as they had a chance to see you again in the last couple of decades, they went crazy for your work.
Hmm. That's very flattering.
You've been a very difficult subject to track down. You left very few clues. I had a very difficult time finding out the things that I did find out about you.
You did.
It's been a long, hard trail, but a lot of fun. And quite a good challenge.
You must have worked very hard to get all of that
information. Oh, ma'am, I'm telling you. Everybody that I talked to, even the smallest clues. And, of course, once we started doing the magazine, people began writing letters saying, I knew Betty in 1950, I knew Betty... that's how Joe Hansen...
Yes, how did you get a hold of Joe?
He wrote to me.
He wrote to you?
Yeah. Talked about your meeting out on the beach. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember. I don't remember where I met him, but I remember meeting him.
Uh-huh. He said he threw a bunch of cold water on you and got you mad.
I didn't know that was Joe Hansen that did that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
And he also talked about you and Jimmy going down to Los Angeles and swimming someplace and having a race where you beat the two of them. He said they were quite humiliated because, of course, they were sailors at the time.
Yeah. I don't remember much about that, but I guess I did.
Mm. Well, it's just, you know, I have like a million questions I've always wanted to ask you, and I don't even know where to begin. Everybody that I bump into that knew you has always said good things about you. I've never heard a bad word about you, Betty, from anybody.
That's very nice.
And in fact, over the last 5 years, and I'll send you photocopies of these because you probably haven't seen them, there have been probably 15 or 20 articles and newspaper clippings and little pieces on you, and universally everybody says nice things about you. It's just amazing to read, you know, 15 or 20 pieces about any one human being and have the press like them, you know, universally. So you certainly left a positive wake in your trail.
I think they exaggerated my tardiness.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever being 3 days late to a job.
Yeah, Sam Menny told me that story.
Or that I was 5 or 6 hours late.
Yeah.
I remember being an hour or an hour and a half late, but never in the 5 or 6 hours.
Uh-huh. Somebody told me that, here's a question. When you were living on 46th Street...
Yeah.
Somebody told me that you were originally living with a photographer by the name of John Vasilescu.
I read that in the annual, but I wasn't living with any photographer.
Mm-hmm. That was a story that one of the guys that knew you told me. He seemed to remember you telling it to him.
No, there was a man by that name or something similar to that name that I don't remember who lived on the third floor or floor beneath me.
I see.
But I never did even pose for him. He was a photographer.
Right.
And we never went anywhere together or did anything together.
Maybe that's the confusion. But you always lived alone then when you came to New York.
Yeah.
You know, the building where you used to live is long gone. I've been trying to get pictures of it.
They tore it down and put a big parking lot, one of those round ones.
Mm-hmm.
Parking garage out of it.
Well,
I went to New York with my husband then in 1969.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the big parking garage there.
Uh-huh. Well, they've since torn that down, and there's a big building in the place now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I guess nothing stays forever. A lot of that old neighborhood is being torn down, but there's still a few buildings that you'd probably recognize. Your old acting building.
Is still there?
Still there. And the Park Sheraton across the street, the building is still standing.
Still there?
Yeah.
That's why I used to go to the health club.
Did people think you were a health nut?
Not especially.
Because, I mean, that's...
They knew I went and did exercises and went swimming.
Uh-huh. Because that was very unusual for a person to be so rigorous in the 1950s about their health. I mean, I'm sure it seemed unusual to people.
Yes.
But, it's,
You're really a good artist.
Oh, yeah, that's...
I like that picture. It looks more like me than anything I can remember seeing of it.
Yeah, it's...
It looks like me more than any of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Other paintings I've seen.
And there's little labels on the crate that you're sitting on.
Yeah.
Hey, did you... Now, somebody told me, let me think, who was this? Dick Arbib. No, Johansson. Told me that you moved to Pittsburgh.
No, I didn't move to Pittsburgh. My mother lived in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I see. That's what that address was.
When I was in New York, I would go down to visit her for a week or two every now and then.
Uh-huh. She moved up from Nashville.
I know it said in there that I had married a sailor named Bill. He wasn't a sailor. He was in the Army.
Right.
And that we moved to Pittsburgh.
That's what Johansson remembered.
No.
And he sent me a Xerox of his address book.
Oh, yeah.
And it has a Pittsburgh address there for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he must have misunderstood or something. It was my mother that lived in Pittsburgh.
You sure used to go down to Florida a lot.
Yes, I used to love to go to Florida.
Miami and the
my
Keys.
My sister lived in Coral Gables, which is a part of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go down and stay with her.
Dick Arbib was telling me about the trip you two took down.
How did you meet him? I just knew him as Richard Arbib.
Al Jazbo Collins.
Jazbo?
Jazbo used to live downstairs from me when I lived on 45th Street.
Oh, yeah.
And I was talking to him one afternoon saying, hey, look, I'm doing this book on Betty Page. And he said, I knew Betty Page. And I said, oh, wonderful. What do you remember? He says, I don't remember anything. He says, but I can tell you a guy who can tell you more about her, and he turned me over to Dick, so.
Is he still drawing, Carl?
Yes, ma'am, he still is drawing. Still has a studio, working happily every day.
He is. He was a real nice guy.
Still is, and he's a fine artist.
I know. He used to draw some of the most fantastic cars of the future that I've ever seen.
Now, I have a little postcard of what I think is you sitting in the back seat of a futuristic car. Is that you?
No.
Because he said that he took you to an auto show once.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
This was after you guys had stopped dating, but you were still friends. Mm-hmm. And he had designed a car. Let me send you a Xerox of that, too. Maybe you can identify it.
Okay.
And, there's also this business about beauty contests. Did you ever do any beauty contests?
I was second runner-up to Miss New York in 1951.
Ah,
And I would also entered the C contest, Miss C, the magazine called C.
Right.
But I had been out all night the night before.
Uh-huh.
And I looked real sleepy-eyed.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really want to go, but I had promised some fellas that I would go anyhow. I placed seventh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was
all I ever entered.
You never went in officially into any, because there was a guy out in Long Island who said he remembered you in around 50 or 51 coming out to a contest.
That was in this New York contest.
Yeah.
We had it, they had it in Port Washington.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what happened about that. It was the... Oh, what were those fellas called? A bachelor's club.
Uh-huh.
They were sponsoring the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 weeks before the contest, one of them telephoned me and wanted me to go with them on an outing on a yacht party.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go. And he said, "You'll be sorry, Betty," and hung up.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know if... And he was one of the judges. So all of the Bachelor Club were the judges. So Sandu Scott won, and she went with them on the...
I see.
On the yacht party. So I don't know if that's why I lost or not.
Well, who knows? It's hard to say with things like that. Gosh, you know, it's like, I've got a list as long as my arm of questions I know I've always wanted to ask you, and I'm kind of like, I'm stuck here, because I always wondered if I'd ever speak to you, too, you know? It was, we had no idea that, you know, where you were, or that you'd ever want to speak to anybody, or,
Well, when I turned my life over to the Lord, January 1959,
mm-hmm.
I went to Bible schools for 3 years, and I thought I wanted to be a missionary.
Mm-hmm.
But that no mission board would take me because I had been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got away from all of my past life of what I had been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went to the Bible schools and was very happy going there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just let go of everything that I had done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing ever came of it. I didn't do anything with it. I just taught Sunday school for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
13-year girls.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed my modeling years.
Well, you certainly reached, I mean, you know, was it a surprise for you that, you know, you found this thing, you were there to be an actress, and all of a sudden you're a pinup queen? Did that...
No, I just got into it.
Yeah.
I met Jerry Tibbs on the beach. It was on Coney Island, not on Jones Beach.
Uh-huh.
And I just got into it. But I really, you've got it mentioned in the book a lot, that I really wanted to be an actress.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. I didn't have much ambition during those years.
Uh-huh.
To do anything much. I was so disappointed from my marriage breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And the divorce, because I never wanted to have a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And like my mother and father had.
Well, your marriage was very fast. I mean...
Oh, it should not have been in the first place. I didn't want to be married.
Well, how did that all come?
He talked me into it.
Yeah, how did that all come to be?
Well, when he got drafted during the Second World War, he kept telling me that he might get killed, and I owed it to him to marry him. And he talked to me so much about it that I just... went up to Gallatin, Tennessee, about 30 miles from Nashville, one Saturday morning,
mm-hmm.
wearing a black dress,
mm-hmm.
and we just got married. And 5 minutes afterwards, as I was sitting in the bus, I thought, what have I done? I don't want to be married.
Uh-huh.
And I was still going to Peabody then, George Peabody College.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have it acknowledged. I kept it a secret that I was married. And as soon as I graduated from Peabody, I went to California because he was stationed at Marysville, about 150 miles, about 50 miles north of San Francisco. But I thought he was going to be there for a while, and so did he, but within 2 weeks, he was shipped overseas to the South Pacific.
Right.
And I stayed there for 2 more years.
Now, Charlie Hanson tells me that you had a sister in San Francisco. Is that true?
No, my sister came out there
came to
and stayed
visit.
With me for a while. But I had a brother-in-law and his wife. Billy's brother, Claude, and his wife were out there, so I didn't feel completely alone.
Right. Now, how did this lead to going down to Hollywood? Because a couple of your classmates said they saw you there.
Well, I was working for Enterprise Engine and Foundry Company as a secretary to the sales manager, and a man named Art Grayson had a window washing business. And he and his men were washing the windows. And he asked me if I had ever done any modeling. He had a Hollywood commercial motion picture company. And he wanted to know if I had ever done commercials, and I told him no. So he signed me on under a contract for 3 years. He said he'd get me in the movies. And he took a lot of pictures of me, and he sent some of them down to 20th Century Fox. And immediately they sent a telegram back to him telling me to come down there for a screen test. And I was thrilled to death, of course, and I went down there with him. But the screen test was a big flop. They had made me up, the makeup men, to look like Joan Crawford. With my hair bunched out on the side and a great big mouth on one side to the other. And when I saw the test, I didn't even recognize myself hardly. It didn't look like me. I don't know why they didn't let me put my makeup on the way it was in the pictures that they liked. I had the screen test with John Russell, you know, he played the lawman on the TV.
Right. Handsome guy.
And they didn't, I know, he was a very nice fellow. They didn't like the idea that I had such a thick southern accent either. And they said, your agent is up in San Francisco, and he ought to be down here with you. He had already gone back by then.
Oh, I see.
To his wife. And they said he ought to be down here so we can negotiate with him. And they didn't like that either, that he was up in San Francisco.
Right.
He had been a silent days comedy director in the silent movies, and he wanted to get back into the movie business. That's why he sent my pictures down there. So that was all that was.
So you went back up to San Francisco and then waited for...
I waited for Billy to come
Billy
home
to come.
From overseas. But I had... stopped his allotment check because I didn't want to be married, but I didn't want to write him a Dear John letter while he was fighting over there. So I waited until he got home. And then we tried to get along together, but he was so jealous of me, it was pitiful. He accused me of sleeping with every sailor in San Francisco. And we didn't get along at all, and I went to Haiti for 4 months as secretary to a man who was had a mahogany furniture business, and he was closing it out. I had a real good time in Haiti. If I had ever been prejudiced, all of it disappeared while I was down there.
Were you being raised in the South, did you feel that you'd been, you know, had that any of that creeped in, did you think?
Not much. I just remember being very hurt about something when I was about 13 years old. I was collecting those little movie star pictures and cigarettes.
Right, cigarette cards.
And I had a lot of them in my hand, and I was walking along by the Capitol building, and two black girls, a tall one and a short one, came up to me and jerked my pictures out of my hand, and started slapping me around. And I didn't think too much of the black race right after that sometimes. But when I went to Haiti, I got over all my prejudices, if I still had them.
Well, I mean, after all, Jerry Tibbs was a black photographer.
He was a real nice fella. I liked Jerry. He could make the girls look so beautiful.
Yeah.
He would retouch all of his pictures.
Uh-huh.
He used to put me on the cover of a little Harlem magazine, news magazine.
Uh-huh.
And I would look so pretty in the pictures, he'd put long eyelashes on and retouch everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hear he was pretty good. In fact, I spoke to his son.
Oh, you did?
His son still lives over in Brooklyn, and,
How is Jerry?
Jerry, I think, passed away in 1978.
Oh, really?
Some time ago.
That's too bad.
And as far as I know, Cass Carr is still in around town somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Somewhere uptown in a nursing home.
If you run into him, tell him I said hello.
All right, I guess he was kind of an important guy in your,
Yes, I liked Cass. He was a nice fellow.
Now,
we had fun on the field trips.
Now, initially he used to teach up in Harlem at the YMCA, is that right?
I don't know. I thought he was a band leader.
Well, that too.
He had a band.
Right.
An orchestra.
Right, and he also had the Concord Camera Club.
Yeah.
On 47th Street?
Yeah, just around the corner from me.
Did he move his studio to be close to you?
No, I don't think so.
It was just a coincidence that you guys lived in the same neighborhood?
Yeah, just a coincidence.
I guess it made it easy for you to go to work, huh? Right around the corner. Who introduced you to Irving Claw?
I don't remember. I was thinking about that myself.
Somebody said it was a 3D photographer that used to shoot 3D for the Claws before they did it themselves.
I don't remember them ever shooting 3D.
Yeah, that seems to be the big mystery. Because two of the photographs in the annual are taken from stereo shots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from the Claws. So,
Are you selling their stuff now where you had all of those pictures of the movies and...
Oh, no, no. No, that's just an old movie star news catalog.
I was wondering.
In fact, people keep calling me and saying, you know, I want to order page 26. I keep telling them that I can't do it. It's just a reprint.
Paula still has charge of everything now.
She runs a tight ship still.
If you see it, give her a big kiss for me.
Well, she's always talking about you. Have you heard from Betty? Have you seen Betty? I was in Florida on a trip looking for her, and I didn't see her.
She was a real nice person. She got along very well.
Yeah, she has good thoughts about you.
That's good. I didn't get the books until a few days ago.
Oh, Jeff.
I noticed you have a date on there, on that little note. Of November 14th.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know whether Jack was holding them to him for some reason or what.
I don't know.
But I didn't get them until 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy you saw it.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased that you liked it. It was I did everything. I researched it. I picked the photographs. I made all the typographical errors myself.
And you wrote it all.
I wrote it all.
I think you did a magnificent job.
Well, thank you. I'm dedicated to you and your memory. Yeah. And what was your New York City apartment like?
It had a living room and a small bedroom and a little tiny kitchenette and a full bath.
Now, was the kitchenette part of the living room? Was that all the same one big room?
No.
Had a nook off the side?
The stove was in the living room.
Right.
I kept a curtain around it. But the space for the refrigerator and cabinets was right outside the living room. Between the living room and the bathroom.
Right.
The only thing I didn't like about it, there was only one sink. And that was in the bathroom.
So you washed your...
I would wash everything in the bathroom.
That doesn't sound too practical.
No. It was a very inexpensive place. In that old building on 46th Street.
Yeah.
My rent was $46.29 a month.
Boy, you could make that an afternoon with the Claws, huh?
Whenever I'd go to Florida or go to my mother's in Pittsburgh, I would keep my apartment because I would always have it.
Sure.
It cost me much.
Of course. But, I mean, that must have been pretty amazing for you to live so close to Broadway and so close to the Radio City Music Hall. And
I was right in the middle of everything.
Holy mackerel.
I was very fond of my little apartment.
Boy, what a place to be situated. I mean, if that's what you wanted to do was train, boy, you had the best chances in the world for it there.
But I never tried out for Broadway or off-Broadway. I had one little lead in a little Mexican play off-Broadway at a small little theater.
Now, what's this about you appearing in a drama arena production called Three?
I didn't go to the drama arena. I don't know where that came from. I just went to Herbert Berghoff's studio.
That's the only place you ever acted, huh? I mean, you know, studied acting.
I had a couple of small parts on TV, on the U.S. Steel Show.
Right.
U.S. Steel Hour.
What did you play on that?
The Eyewitness Show. Gee, I don't even remember now.
Mm-hmm. And what about this this production of Camino Real?
I was never in Camino Real.
No, I don't have any memory of that.
No.
Because,
I went to summer stock for 2 summers.
Right. Did you perform on...
in 1954.
Uh-huh. What, did you do any performing on the stage in 50 and 54?
Yes, I had a small part in Gentlemen Prefer Blonde.
Uh-huh.
And I forget the name of the thing, but one thing with Testa Morris. Seacrest Summer Theater.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was the place. Now, is that where you went in both 50 and 54?
No, in 1950 I went to Greenbush Summer Theater in Rockland County, New York.
Near Nyack.
Near Nyack.
Yeah. Do you remember what the productions were up there?
I played Mabel in Three Men on a Horse.
Oh, good part.
I can't remember anything else.
Yeah. Did you, in your high school production of Dracula, were you in Dracula?
No, I was not in any plays until my senior year.
Uh-huh.
I played Kate Pettigrew in Barclay's Theater.
Right. And something called Oh Clarissa?
Oh Clarissa was a comedy.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember anything about it, but I was in that.
Yeah, you got good reviews, I recall.
Yes.
Well.
And I was in the Peabody Players at Peabody.
Right.
We had a 15-minute... The Peabody Players Radio Gear, we had a 15-minute program at WSM on Saturdays. I wrote a script, a detective story,
mm-hmm.
and it was put on the air for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was very proud of that.
That must have tickled your mom. Proud of her little girl.
And I played in Cavalcade, Noah Coward's Cavalcade, where I aged 60 years.
Oh, no kidding.
I got good reviews for that.
Uh-huh. This is still a Peabody.
Yes. I had one part as Gertie in Our Wilderness at the Nashville Community Theater. That's all I did there.
You were pretty busy in your senior year and your college years.
Yes.
You know, it's funny, they have no record for you at Peabody.
They don't?
No, when I went down there, I went to their historical division and spent a whole day there looking for just scraps about you.
I graduated with a B.A. in 1944.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a record of your teaching certificate.
But nothing at Peabody?
Not a clue. I can't
That's
find a word.
Strange.
That's what I thought. Now, somebody told me that you were homecoming queen. Is that true?
No, I was just very popular with the 333rd College Training Detachment Air Force boys that were on the campus.
Uh-huh.
They called me the Duchess. And they used to wait for me to get to class and put their swords up across
Quite an honor.
I enjoyed all their adventure.
I guess so. Pretty exciting warriors for you, too, huh? You're a big fan of the movies. You like the movies a lot.
Oh, yes, I've always liked the movies ever since I was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think of something that happened. My mother was pregnant, about to have me, when she and Daddy went to the movies one night.
Mm-hmm.
And about halfway through the movie, she started having labor pains, and they had to leave. And I often think maybe that's why I was such a movie fan, because she almost had me in the theater.
I wonder what it was.
I don't know.
In 1927? It'd be a silent movie, wouldn't it?
No.
That's a distance back. Now, why do you spell your name B-E-T-T-I-E?
I've spelled it that way all my life.
Yeah, any reason?
My brother Jimmy spells his name J-I-M-M-I-E.
Uh-huh.
And my sister Goldie spells hers G-O-L-D-I-E.
Uh-huh.
We've always put the I-E on there.
I see.
I don't know where it came from.
Because your birth certificate says B-E-T-T-Y.
It does?
Yes, ma'am.
You've got a copy of my birth certificate?
No, Bob Schultz from Fond Memories tracked it down. And
I'm trying to get a copy of it myself now.
Oh, well.
Jack, I asked him to...
Oh, I have a Xerox.
A little form that I found.
Uh-huh, I have a Xerox if you want me to send it to you.
No, I think you have to have...
No, it has to be some official, yeah.
Yes.
But, I mean, you...
I want to get me a California... identification card.
Uh-huh. Did you ever drive?
Huh?
Did you ever drive?
Yes. I had a Falcon, Black Ford Falcon station wagon for several years. And when I was married to Harry in Florida, I had a little Rambler.
Uh-huh.
I used to like to drive.
Uh-huh.
I even drove half of the way up to Canada. Harry and the three children, he had three children.
Right.
When we went to Canada, I drove a great big overhead camper.
Oh, my. I can just see that sight.
I must have been a pretty good driver. They trusted me. They would be sleeping in the camper.
I guess they didn't know any better, huh?
While I was driving.
Yeah.
I never had an accident or anything now, mm-hmm. So I must not have been too bad.
Well, you know, you're a pretty smart woman. That's really, you know, to be sharp and aware. That's what driving's all about. Hey, by the way, those postcards were for you.
I thought you wanted me to...
Oh, no. I figured, look, if now that Betty's got a box number, everybody's going to be writing her. This will make things easy. So let me send you some more of these postcards.
I would like to have one.
And you can... I'll send you a big 20 or 30 of them.
I don't need all of that, man.
Yeah, well, I figured,
send me a couple of them.
All right. And if you want to answer some of your mail on them, I'm sure people would love to get a picture of you from you.
Steve Brewster and Janice sent me one that they wanted me to write something on the back of it.
Right.
And I did and sent it back to them.
I bet that was a thrill.
They wrote me some very nice letters.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're quite beloved. I don't know if you know this, but you have lots and lots of fans. Thousands of people admire you. You'd be amazed at how many women I talk to that say, Betty Page, she's my idol. You know, she's my role model. She's a strong, independent woman who, you know, had the nerve to go get what she wanted. You really have impressed a lot of women.
I'm surprised to hear that, because I didn't think that they went in for pin-up photography and news and things like that.
See, you're dealing with a new generation of people who, you know, who watch Madonna.
I know.
For heaven's sake. So, I mean, you know, you're real cute next to Madonna. I mean, innocent, I would say. What do you think of the whole Madonna?
I like her.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has the courage of her own convictions. I don't think she's nearly as pretty as Marilyn Monroe.
Uh-huh.
But she's getting just as famous as Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, easily. She always seems to be in the news. Mm. No, and another independent woman. You know, whenever I hear women talk about other women that they really admire, inevitably you come up for that very reason, you know? You seem to have done the thing that you wanted to do in a time when it wasn't the thing to do.
Yes.
I mean, did you get a lot of heat from other women?
No. Never heard much of anything.
Yeah. I suppose it's because most women had no point of reference for you anyway.
No.
How did you meet Ouija?
I don't remember.
No.
I'm sorry, but I just don't remember.
Must have been some kind of a photo club, camera club.
Must have been.
Who are some of the famous people that photographed you? I heard that Sammy Davis Jr. photographed you once. Is that true?
Well, I met him one time and rode in a cab with him. I don't remember now where we were going.
Uh-huh.
Was he your photographer?
Yeah, he used to shoot photographs.
Oh, he did?
And I guess James Wong Hao, the famous cinematographer,
yes,
is a regular camera club fan.
My memory's not as good as it used to be.
Ah, well, now, whose is? You know, time flies for everybody. And the big question has always been, why did you leave New York?
Well, I was really disappointed in all of that Kefauver mess.
Mm-hmm.
When he was trying to get something on Irving Carr and me too.
Mm-hmm.
They never did have the trial of Kefauver with me.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me a subpoena.
Mm-hmm.
And one Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, I was supposed to be at the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there, and I sat there all day up until 1 o'clock in the morning. And they didn't call me at all.
No.
So I never did testify. I told them I would testify on Irving Claus Park.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said he never did any nudes even.
Mm-hmm.
The girls had to be covered complete top and bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So they let him go. I don't think they fined him.
No, there's nothing they could do. I think he took the Fifth Amendment, and that was that.
But that was very mean of them to keep me sitting there waiting all that time and didn't even tell me to go home.
Amazing.
They brought me some sandwiches, and that was all.
Mm-hmm. But you never spoke to Kefauver, no?
No.
So you left in 1957?
December 1957.
Now, Art Amesy told me that you had quit modeling for a little while, had come back to it.
Well, I would quit every now and then and go somewhere.
Yeah.
Go to Florida or go to my mother's, because photographers get tired of using the same girls all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to get away from it, and so they will be ready to use you when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
After some months have passed.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's beginning of my work day.
Okay. Well, I'm just calling because we're in town for a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be doing meetings at Marvel tomorrow, and
Seekers, do you remember the name Rosemary Woods? She's famous for being Tricky Dicky Nixon's secretary who managed to erase 18 minutes of the Watergate tapes. Well, in this part of the Betty Page interview, my former boss, Greg Theakston, managed to record some lame dinner date with a pal over the most crucial part of this tape, Seekers. The part involving why she quit, where she went, the mystery itself. I mean, I managed to fix all the places where he's fropping up all through this two-hour interview, striking wet matches while Betty's talking. I managed to soundforge most of that out, but I can't fix this. We'll just have to pick up where he picks up again. Sorry, Seekers.
It's going to be 6:30.
Okay.
Sounds fine.
Too many pictures of me already, anyhow.
You thought you were too old. Well, you're about 37 by then, huh?
No, I was 34.
34. Uh-huh.
In 1957. I think I was 34.
So you headed for Florida?
Yes. I went to Fort Lauderdale. And then I called up my old boyfriend that I had dated in 1954, and he wanted to see me, so we started in hot and heavy again.
Hey, what's life for but love?
Hmm?
I said, what is life for but to make love? What's this guy's name? At 54 in Miami, Key West?
In Key West.
Key West.
He was standing out by the wall, by the ocean, at the beach, a little small beach in Key West. And I wanted somebody to take my picture at the southernmost point in the United States. And I asked him if he would take my picture. But he was so nervous that the picture was blurred when it came out. But he was a very sweet fellow, but he was 12 years younger than I was.
12 years?
Yes.
Oh, my.
He was about 18.
And that's when you met 54.
In 1954.
Yeah, and then you got back together...
1957.
Right.
Right before Christmas.
So what happened? Did you guys get married?
When I knew I had made a mistake right after I married him. All he wanted to do was make love, go to the movies, and eat hamburgers. He was crazy about hamburgers. He didn't even want me to cook anything for him, the hamburgers. I just got tired of the monotony of living with him, just doing the same things all the time. And he was afraid to travel or anything like that. He stayed in Key West all the time. And after about 10 months, I just gave it up. By then, I was working as a secretary for the Department of Public Works at the Naval Station. But he and I had a good venture while it lasted. Together, we pooled our money and bought a 26-foot fishing boat. And we started building traps to catch lobsters. I was building them with him. We built 200 traps. And we would take them out in the mornings and put them in the ocean with bottle caps and corks with your number on it. You had to get a number from the government in order to do anything fishing, deep sea fishing. But it was a big flop because a lot of good-for-nothing boys in Key West would go out and pull our traps while we were working. And when we'd get off from work and go out to see about our traps, Armin would notice that they were all pulled. And we hardly made any money on it. We were going to sell them to the restaurants in Key West. But those good-for-nothing boys just ruined it for us. It was a big disappointment in my life. We were going into business.
I'm sorry to hear it didn't work out for you. But, well, look, I'm not going to talk your ear off here the first time. Let me send you some more goodies. And I spoke to Joel Barron, Olivia, the pinup artist, Olivia. Have you seen any of her paintings of you?
No, I haven't.
All right, let me send you a few of the little postcards that they've done with pictures of you as well.
Yes, I would love that.
And I wanted to talk to you about this print. I have 1,000 of these posters left. And I'm absolutely certain we could sell every one of them for $150. And I'm willing to split that with you 50-50 if you're interested in signing. I would give you the money in advance, and then you would sign them.
Well, if you think you couldn't sell them for that much money.
Yes, ma'am. Everybody said, oh, no, that's too low. I said, no. Anybody that really wants a Betty autograph should be able to get one. So $150 is anybody could afford that. I have several that Paula Claw autographed. And nobody ever gets Paula's autograph. They don't realize when they buy the pictures of you that she took a lot of them. And that's a good idea, too. Well, all right, then let me get the wheels rolling on this. I'll send a check with each roll of 100.
Okay.
Potentially, that's like $75,000 for you.
A lot of money.
Yes, ma'am. But, I mean, mostly it'll be such a treat for people to be able to get your signature, your autograph. Because it's a very scarce autograph. A lot of people want your little name. You know, I guess that's what you mean to them. One last question. I've always wondered, you've got a scar on the back of your left leg.
Yeah.
How did you get that?
I don't know. I've had it all my life. I think it's from a bite or something that I got when I was little, but I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. Because I know you...
I don't think it's a vaccination or anything like
no?
that.
No, it doesn't look like it.
No.
And you usually you would hide it with a stocking top. But every once in a while, when you're in a bikini or something, there it is in the back. I always
see it.
I was always curious about that. And the one on your hand, on your right hand, the little round scar between your thumb
yeah,
and your
foot. That's where I was cooking sausage once when I was in my teens, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And the pan got too hot, the grease was too hot, and as I was flipping the sausage, it
splashed up.
Popped out there and took all my skin away.
Wow. You know, for a pinup girl, you have a lot of little scars. You're quite a tomboy. Did you ever break your knee? Did you break one of your legs?
I didn't break it. I was doing a little wrestling movie with June King at Irving Claw's.
Uh-huh.
And she fell on my knee. She pulled me down, and somehow she fell on my knee when it was bent.
Uh-huh.
And I had a horrible feeling of something cracking in my knee.
Uh-huh. Because sometimes you can see when your knees looks a little puffier.
But it wasn't hurting me or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I got home, I could hardly get up the stairs.
Mm.
The thing was bent double, my knee was.
Uh-huh.
And I went to several doctors and was booked into the hospital for the next Monday morning. When I was lying in bed, and I couldn't straighten out my knee. It was just bent double.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lying in bed, and all of a sudden I heard a voice saying, "Betty, you can straighten out your knee." And sure enough, I was able to straighten it out. And I didn't have to go to the hospital, and it got well. I know the Lord healed me.
Uh-huh. Amazing. Because...
That's the only problem I've had.
Wow. I got a call from a guy who's working on some kind of a movie about you and indicated that his agency had gotten a hold of you somehow and he was just concerned about... apparently you're not interested in this...
Well, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I just know that Bob Shapiro of Frontline News Service...
Right.
...is doing something about a movie of my life.
So, there's a line of people who will be very happy. And generally, whoever I've spoken to indicated that I spoke to you are very happy, very pleased that you're in good health, you're doing well, and everybody squeals with delight when they hear that you're okay.
That's good.
You got a lot of fans out there.
I'm good.
Yeah. But you meant a lot to us.
It's good to know so many people that are still interested in you.
Betty, thousands of people are interested in you, and...
But I wouldn't want them to see me now. I'll be 70 years old April 22nd.
Yes, ma'am. That's what I figure.
And I wish that I would like them to remember me as I was.
Uh-huh. I think they will.
I just don't look good anymore.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're in good health anyway.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. You're over your flu?
I'm over the flu.
Good.
I had a terrible case of it.
It was a lingering flu. They said it would last for a week or two. So.
It lasted for a month.
Oh, my. Well, I was afraid that you were mad and you weren't going to answer me, but...
No.
I'm very pleased that we're talking. So, let me let you go now. I'll send you a package of treats by way of Jack. And I'll call you again in a few days just to see how you're doing.
All right.
Nice to talk to you finally, Betty.
Okay.
Sleep tight.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, so there you have it, Seekers. Betty Page from her own lips. Oh, I'm sorry I kept this from you for over a decade.
But
I made her an unspoken, unbroken promise. Betty was real to me, and I wanted her to be just as real to you. And I think she is now. Good night, Seekers. And good night, Betty, wherever you are.